Lebanon takes a pounding for a 10th straight day.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Cheryl Glazer. Israeli warplanes are bombarding Lebanon once again, and word has it that Israel may soon send in ground troops. Residents in southern Lebanon have been told to leave immediately. Thousands of evacuees have been fleeing the country for the last few days, and it's not just expats. Many Lebanese are scrambling to get out too, says reporter Jay Solomon, who's been covering the story for the Wall Street Journal.
I think if you have money, you can probably get out. I know a lot of Lebanese either go up through northern Lebanon into Aleppo in Syria and get out from there. People also go through Syria to Jordan and get out through there. And if you got money, you can find drivers who will make that trip. I mean, the Israelis have been attacking the roads, but, you know, if you've got a pretty mobile car, you can move your way around and get there. But if you don't have money, if you have a big family, I think you'd have a real problem.
Making things even tougher, the Lebanese government is putting limits on bank withdrawals of U.S. dollars.
You know, if people want to get out, they need dollars. So it's like any commodity. They're running short on it. They're rationing dollars just as they, you know, could start rationing food and water in certain places. Bankers I've talked to said there's not really been runs on banks, but there's certainly been runs on hard currency, on dollars and probably French currency and others. People need that money to get out, and there's not enough to go around.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Jay Solomon talking with us from Beirut. The U.S. Army announced cutbacks yesterday designed to focus spending solely on the war in Iraq. No travel will be authorized and no supplies can be purchased or shipped that aren't critical to the war effort. Chief of Staff Peter Schumacher says the Army entered the Iraq War with a $56 billion shortfall in equipment, and it's just gotten worse. Looks like congressional negotiators may be closing in on an agreement to overhaul the U.S. private pension system. The deal would close loopholes that have let employers underfund pensions by almost $450 billion. But as Sarah Gardner reports, that's going to cost companies real cash, and they want something in return.
44 million Americans still get traditional corporate pensions at retirement, but fewer employers are offering them. Some companies have even declared bankruptcy to shed the obligation. Lawmakers now say they're on the verge of a deal that would force employers still in the game to more fully fund their pension plans. Aaliyah Wong is pension policy director for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. She says if Congress is going to change the rules, companies want predictability. That includes a fixed formula for determining just how much a company must invest in its pension fund each year.
There's been debate about what that should be. But the overriding concern for employers is that there be certainty and that they be able to know exactly what their expenditures will be and not have to revisit the situation every 2 years.
Congress may vote on a pension reform package as early as next week. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Some disappointing corporate earnings took the air out of the markets yesterday. The Dow fell 83 points, or 0.75%. The Nasdaq knocked off 41 points, almost 2%. The S&P 500 slid 0.8%. This is Marketplace. The space shuttle crew returns safe and sound this week. In today's Job Files, we look at what it takes to have the right stuff.
My name is Bill MacArthur. I'm a NASA astronaut. I've had the opportunity to fly on the space shuttle 3 times, and last year I spent 6 months on board the International Space Station. My background is as a military test pilot. I got a degree from West Point in applied science and engineering. On this last mission, I was a commander of the International Space Station. The day would involve a lot of just personal tasks, getting up and shaving and brushing your teeth, to things that were more complex, operating the robotic arm. We did 2 spacewalks. Space food has a tendency to be somewhat bland. One of the most highly prized items are the little packages of Tabasco sauce. It really tastes good in space.
This is American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Microsoft Dynamics, business solutions for CRM, supply chain, and financial management. Microsoft.com/Microsoft Dynamics. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
This is Marketplace. I'm Cheryl Glazer. The Justice Department is expected to weigh in today on a Supreme Court case over how to interpret the Clean Air Act. On one side, Duke Energy, one of the biggest electricity providers in the country. On the other, Environmental Defense, a nonprofit group. There's a lot at stake. Some are calling the case the biggest challenge to the Clean Act ever to come before the high court. Shia Levitt has more.
At debate here is part of the Clean Air Act that dictates when power plants have to update pollution control technology. Currently, controls have to be modernized when plant renovations cause a boost in emissions. But industry and public health advocates differ on what constitutes an increase in pollution, whether it's tons released per year or average hourly emission rates. It might sound like semantics, but it's an important difference, says Scott Siegel. He directs the Electric Reliability Coordinating Council, a group of power companies, including Duke Energy, that works on interpreting and reforming the Clean Air Act.
If you're measuring the total annual pollution out of a power plant, that's a function of how much demand there was for power in that particular year. And frankly, that's not something the power plant has control over. If you measure the hourly rate of emissions, you're saying, how little pollution can you make to produce the same unit of electricity? That's a real measurement of how effective the environmental controls are at a plant.
Siegel says requiring expensive pollution controls might run some power companies out of business or force them to pass higher costs on to consumers. Instead, he advocates what he calls a more flexible approach to the Clean Air Act, such as cap and trade policies. He says that would give industry incentives to bring emissions down. But environmental and public health advocates say the law is meant to regulate annual pollution levels. John Walk directs the Clean Air Program at the National Resources Defense Council. He says there are health costs in the communities near power plants when overall emissions go up.
Kids go to the hospital with asthma, and the elderly get sick from heart disease when pollution goes up. They are increasing pollution tens of thousands of tons a year and trying to escape responsibility for cleaning it up.
Walk says measuring hourly pollution means plants could operate longer hours and increase overall smog and soot in surrounding areas.
What you're talking about here are some companies that don't want to spend the money to protect the public and to deliver their electricity services in the clean manner that their competitors are doing.
The Duke Energy versus Environmental Defense case is being watched closely by several states and public health groups. Craig Oren is an environmental law professor at Rutgers University.
This same issue of what constitutes a change in emissions has come up. In fact, a number of courts are waiting for the Supreme Court's decision in order to decide what to do in other cases.
If the Supreme Court decides in favor of an annual rate, it could mean hundreds of millions of dollars in upgrades for power plants. The case will be argued in the High Court's November session. In Washington, I'm Shia Levitt for Marketplace.
And here in Los Angeles, I'm Cheryl Glazer. Thanks for joining us. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
Thousands of adults are swarming.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.